Now from the KSFR newsroom, At Noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Tuesday, July 9th. Santa Fe Police Chief Ray Royale says today he's pleased to report a 28% drop in burglaries across the city for the month of June. He adds that this marks 6 months of continuous property crime declines in Santa Fe and yet another five-year low in month-to-month comparisons. If the downward trend continues, Santa Fe could set a record low number of burglaries for the year overall. Besides the crime crackdown initiative known as Operation Full Court Press, implemented in June of 2012, the department is currently tracking hotspots and mapping targeted areas on a weekly basis. Santa Fe's mid-afternoon cloudburst Monday is being blamed for the death of a 51-year-old woman who apparently got caught in turbulent flash flooding of an arroyo near Siringo Road. Tina Vigil's body was spotted around 6 p.m. Extremely heavy rain and hail caused channels leading to the Arroyo Chamizo to flood to an estimated depth of 8 feet at the storm's peak runoff. Governor Martinez's office was evacuated and locked down Monday afternoon after a white powdery substance spilled from an incoming envelope that was being sorted. Two employees immediately put themselves in isolation and summoned representatives from the Department of Public Safety and Homeland Security. A City of Santa Fe hazmat team found the substance to be non-toxic, but the FBI will now be conducting further testing as it takes over investigation of the incident. Today, the Drug Policy Alliance, veterans groups, elected officials, and others are introducing a campaign to protect New Mexico's military veterans' legal access to medical marijuana. They're hoping to eradicate employment discrimination against medically prescribed users and lessen stigmatization by some members of the state's medical community. In 2009, ours became the first medical marijuana state to specifically include post-traumatic stress disorder as a qualifying condition. An attempt to deny PTSD sufferers access to cannabis was taken to the Department of Health in 2012, which they rebuffed in May. And we'll have more on this story for you a bit later as At Noon continues. A memorial simulcast is underway at this hour on the Santa Fe Community College campus of a Prescott, Arizona ceremony honoring the memory of the 19 firefighters who lost their lives battling a wildfire last week. The Granite Mountain Hotshots team was well known to the Santa Fe community as they worked with our local fire department and assisted efforts just a few weeks ago in battling the Thompson Ridge Fire in the Jemez. The college is staging the simulcast in its Jemez room for those in the local area wishing to show a collective display of respect for the fallen. The Los Alamos National Laboratory says it's ahead of schedule on the shipping of its transuranic waste materials off-site to New Mexico's waste isolation pilot plant and other facilities. It's part of the ongoing effort to rid the lab of some 3,700 cubic meters of radioactive materials stored in above-ground containers at Area G by June 30th of next year. So far, more than half of it has been removed. The transuranic waste products consists of clothing, tools, rags, debris, soil, and other items contaminated with radioactive material, mostly plutonium, accumulated at the lab over decades of nuclear research and weapons production. In other news from the lab, scientists there today say that wildfires may contribute to global warming more than previously thought. They've studied measurements taken after the devastating 2011 Los Conchas fire that raged around Los Alamos. It seems that the actual carbon-containing particles emitted by fires are very different than those used in current computer models. In reality, the particles are more like tar balls that absorb more sunlight than previously thought. And that, say the scientists, points to a greater warming of the atmosphere by wildfires than current estimates show. Santa Fe Community College has a new overseer of all academic functions, including the institution's six schools, as well as credit and non-credit offerings, grants management, contract training, and academic support services. Randy Grissom has been appointed Vice President of Academic Affairs for a one-year term by SFCC President Ana Cha Guzman. Grissom has a long history with the school, going back to its opening in 1983 when he was part of its business faculty. The body of former New Mexico Governor David F. Cargo will lie in state in the Capitol Rotunda on Thursday. The 84-year-old Cargo passed away over the July 4th holiday weekend. The youngest person to ever serve as New Mexico's governor, Cargo served two consecutive two-year terms after winning election in 1966 at age 37. A funeral mass is scheduled for the Cathedral Basilica on Friday, with Cargo to be laid to rest in the Santa Fe National Cemetery. And weather for Santa Fe: partly sunny today and tomorrow, with a 30-40% chance for afternoon and evening thundershowers. High temperatures in the upper 80s and overnight lows in the mid-60s. Meanwhile, the current Santa Fe temperature now 82 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At Noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
12 minutes past the hour, as At Noon on KSFR continues with today's feature stories. Today, the Drug Policy Alliance kicks off a campaign to protect our state's military veterans' legal access to medical marijuana. It's an effort to eradicate any employer discrimination against medically prescribed users and reduce stigmatization of cannabis by some members of the medical community, dismissive of its use as a treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder. Joining us now to talk more in depth on the issue is Jessica Helai, Policy Coordinator for the Santa Fe Office of the Drug Policy Alliance here in New Mexico. That organization is dedicated to formulating national drug policies grounded in science, health, and human rights. Jessica, tell us a little bit about the people involved in the campaign you begin today and what the aims are.
So we are a broad coalition of New Mexicans, veterans, military families, lawmakers, and other civilians that are coming together to announce the Freedom to Choose campaign to protect and improve medical or veterans' access to medical marijuana for PTSD and other wounds of war.
Our state's medical marijuana program was the first in the nation to authorize cannabis as an effective treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder, which affects many veterans. Are they still experiencing resistance or disapproval of their use?
Yes, they are. Veterans often encounter difficulty with stigma from medical professionals and stigma and discrimination in the workplace. And these are two of the things that we're really wanting to address in this campaign.
Medical marijuana use was established in our state back in 2009. Governor Martinez is on record as opposing the program, just as the federal government still remains hostile to it as well. Have there been any moves by the Martinez administration that you find to be obstacles to medical cannabis use?
Well, Governor Martinez is no friend to the program, and especially in terms of her candidacy when she was running. She has not actively followed through on her threat to repeal the program. So we're very pleased that the administration actually kept PTSD as a condition eligible for the medical cannabis program, but we don't want to let our guard down. There could always be attacks down the road.
Post-traumatic stress disorder has been challenged as a condition suitable for treatment with cannabis. Can you speak to that issue?
Yeah, PTSD has been a qualified condition since 2009 when it was added by Secretary Vigil. And it has been, since then, the largest growing portion of the patient population who are registered for medical cannabis in New Mexico. In 2012, a petition did come before the Medical Advisory Board, who are the eight expert doctors who approve and qualify conditions, it was soundly defeated through a good turnout of people and constituents, veterans, patients who really show how this medicine works for them. We also supplied a large body of documentation for the Medical Advisory Board with emerging studies that are coming out in other countries and studies that have been done in this country, mostly animal studies. But these, combined with the large patient population here and lack of adverse effects reported, really do support PTSD as a condition that should be eligible for medical cannabis. And since the department has approved to keep PTSD in the program, other states have actually followed New Mexico's model. Oregon and Maine both just passed PTSD into their medical cannabis programs through their legislatures.
And you also note that some military members have faced resistance from their doctors about prescribing cannabis.
Certainly. Well, the biggest issue military members may face and veterans face is that the Veterans Health Administration is not allowed to recommend medical cannabis because of federal law. So there's already a barrier there when their general primary care is not allowed to even discuss it as an option. Similarly, in veterans who are in rural areas, which we have a large rural population of veterans in New Mexico, may not be able to access additional health care providers. We see that as a problem generally in New Mexico, especially for medical cannabis.
And of the federal government's ban on marijuana, are military members' VA benefits impacted by that?
Actually, in 2010, the VA issued a directive saying that medical cannabis patients who are participating under their state's medical cannabis program are able to remain in that program as well as keep their VA benefits and be treated for pain with other medicines in addition to medical cannabis. And they actually created a way for doctors in the VA to be able to document that in their medical records in a prescription section that is other medications not administered by the VA. So we're very thankful that the VA has at least taken that step to allow veterans who are in medical cannabis states to access medicine without being harmed. However, there's a lot of veterans who live in states that do not have medical cannabis laws, and they are prevented from accessing their VA treatments if they use cannabis.
Tell us about some of the state officials that are supporting your efforts.
Sure. We have various representatives signing on. Emily Kane, who carried a bill in this last session to decriminalize marijuana. Bill McCamley. We also have Senator Jerry Ortiz-Pino, Representative Mo Maestas, and we're getting new representatives and senators joining us all the time.
And at the federal level, New Mexico 1st District Congresswoman Michelle Lujan Grisham is also a supporter, yes?
Yes, Congresswoman Lujan Grisham will be joining us today as we launch this campaign, and she's very supportive of working at all levels of government to really make health care for veterans a priority and something that has better continuity than it does at this point in time.
Your final thoughts on the matter?
Our employers, medical professionals, lawmakers, and the public need to know that medical marijuana is a safe and legitimate and effective medicine that New Mexicans have the right to use under our state law. Refusing medical marijuana patients the right to work or otherwise discriminating against them for medical marijuana is bad for our families, bad for our economy. And so we're asking all compassionate New Mexicans to join the Freedom to Choose campaign, tell our lawmakers, medical professionals, and employers not to turn their backs on our veterans, but instead protect the rights of military veterans seeking relief from medical marijuana. When veterans come home, they deserve access to the medicine that works for them.
Jessica Halai with the Santa Fe Office of the Drug Policy Alliance here in New Mexico. Many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
Ebullient mezzo-soprano Susan Graham performs a title role of Jacques Offenbach's riotously funny The Grand Duchess of Gerolstein this summer at the Santa Fe Opera. All's fair in love and war games at the Gerolstein Military Academy, with its dashing uniformed cadets and apple-cheeked local sweethearts cheering them on, with the Academy's patroness, the Grand Duchess herself, in sexy pursuit. Far from being a lady of a certain age, this Grand Duchess is an amorous aristocrat with an eye for Fritz, her favorite young cadet, sung by the dynamic American tenor Paul Appleby. Soprano Anya Matanovic completes the love triangle. Emmanuel Villaume conducts. The Santa Fe Opera's Grand Duchess of Gerolstein promises lots of laughter and fun. Learn more about this production and the entire upcoming season by visiting santafeopera.com or by calling 800-280-4654. That's 800-280-4654. This message is sponsored by the Santa Fe Opera, a tax-exempt organization.
22 minutes past the hour as At Noon on KSFR continues. We caught up with New Mexico Senator Tom Udall earlier today and asked him about some of the issues facing our state. He commented on the furlough days now faced by some Department of Defense workers.
The remedy is lifting the sequestration, or at least working with everybody to put another budget in place that doesn't do the things that the sequestration does. This is a dramatic cut in Department of Defense civilian employees. We're talking furloughs, I think, in the range to 6,000 or 7,000 throughout New Mexico, targeted right on Albuquerque at Kirtland. We're talking 2,100 furloughs. And when we say a furlough, this means an individual is losing a one-fifth of their paycheck during that week. So it's a one day off of five they're required to take. This is a real loss to those families, and these civilian families in the Defense Department are there to support the armed forces that are full-time, and that's something that is necessary and needs to happen in a significant way.
The Federal Public Defender's Office is also facing some major personnel cuts due to sequestration.
Well, the public defenders is another area where justice delayed is justice denied, and we should have adequate counsel for people. We should do everything we can to make sure that criminal charges are kept on a timely basis, and I don't support those kinds of cuts, and I'm going to be doing everything I can over the future weeks to make sure that we do something about this sequester, especially as we now approach the end of this fiscal year. On October 1st, we enter a new fiscal year, and at that particular point, we're going to have to take a hard look at what budgets we put in place.
Finally, Udall commented on that green-lighted 234-mile of pipeline to carry liquid natural gas products across New Mexico, destined for consumers in Texas.
New Mexico has hundreds of pipelines. As everybody knows, those pipelines are used to deliver our resources that we have. We're an export state in terms of energy. We rely on those pipelines exporting our energy to other states. We've worked very hard with FERC. You raised the whole issue of safety. We've worked very hard with them, and I've been on pipeline safety bills. We've had pipeline safety bills passed, which are and been put into law, which are very significant in terms of upping the safety measures that are going to be taken. So there's always an oversight role that needs to happen on these pipelines, but they're what brings in a lot of the revenue for New Mexico. I think that the rough estimate right now is a third of the revenues from New Mexico come from the energy sector when you look at our state budget.
New Mexico Senator Tom Udall speaking with KSFR earlier today. Currently in Santa Fe, it's 82 degrees on its way to a high in the upper 80s. At Noon continues now. The position of mayor of Santa Fe may be undergoing a major change. The Charter Review Commission is recommending that it become a full-time job instead of part-time as it is now. Rebecca Wurzberger is a city councilor and the mayor pro tem. She joins us now. Councilor Wurzberger, would you prefer the position be full-time?
The mayor's position is a full-time position. I can tell you that our mayor works 50 plus hours a week. And I can tell you that as mayor pro tem, I do that. Once I added the mayor pro tem responsibilities and the city council responsibilities, you know, to my city council responsibilities. So I'm very supportive of the concept of the mayor being recognizing and acknowledging that the mayor is full time.
What does the position pay presently?
Well, he's paid the same as council, and our net usually is about $27,000 a year, and then by the time you take everything out, it's about $800 and something every 2 weeks. And I mean, we jokingly say we're very supportive of the living wage, even though we don't provide it to councilors.
It would seem that the job of mayor actually demands more than a part of one's time availability, does it not?
Again, I always like to think in a hierarchy of objectives. And for me, the objective is having that authority and responsibility because you have it. I mean, the citizens expect you to be at every single event. They expect you to help develop policy. They expect you to meet every single person that comes into this city internationally. And so I think with responsibility should come authority.
Do you have any other thoughts about the mayor's duties?
I'm very concerned that the mayor have the power to hire and fire the chief people who work under the mayor. I mean, if you all tried to run the radio station and every time you turned around, your board was firing all the key people or threatening to fire them, I don't think that works. And I think if the mayor, since the mayor is selected citywide, that is important for the mayor to have the responsibility and the ability to implement the vision that he or she has collectively developed with the community and with the, with the council.
And anything you'd like to add?
You know, I guess I'm in my re-mode, like Rebecca Reeve, whatever. You know, rethinking and reevaluating the role of the mayor and developing a clearer understanding of what we really want our mayor to be.
City Councilor Rebecca Wurzberger, many thanks for joining us. And we have more of At Noon coming up for you in just a moment.
Music on the Hill, the free Wednesday evening concert series at St. John's College, resumes July 10th with jazz standards from Janis and Vinny Zumo. Food and beverage available for purchase. Parking is limited, so please carpool or take the free shuttles departing from the Museum Hill parking lot. No dogs, please. Music on the Hill is presented by St. John's College with sponsors Los Alamos National Bank, Verve Gallery, Santa Fe Properties Luxury Market Group, and KSFR.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by P&M, currently providing a recycling program for old refrigerators. P&M will pick up old refrigerators for free and then safely remove the coolant so it doesn't pollute the environment. They'll recycle as much of the refrigerator as possible. If you have a question for P&M, you can talk to them on Twitter or Facebook or visit P&M online at pnm.com.
29 minutes past the hour here at KSFR. The right to have counsel when charged with a crime has long been a basic right of Americans. Now, that right is threatened. Here's KSFR news reporter Charles Maynard with the story.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in the court of law. You have a right to an attorney. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be provided for you free of charge. Keeping these rights in mind, would you like to answer at this moment any questions that I may have?
The Miranda rights, read to a person when they're being arrested, have become a part of our everyday vocabulary thanks to hearing them repeatedly on television. For a number of reasons, one of those rights is in danger of being watered down for those charged with federal crimes. Barbara Mandel is the president of the New Mexico Criminal Defense Lawyers Association.
The last year we've had the furlough, the sequester, and we furloughed. We had 8 furlough days. We've been closing every other Friday. That has made us less effective. In the previous years, we have shrunk. We've not filled positions. Our budget has been shrinking. We've really been tightening our belts. However, we are lean. We're not profligate. We don't overspend. In fiscal year 12, we were the 6th busiest office in the country, only behind the other Southwest border offices and the Central District of California. We are the 4th highest in the country in fiscal year 13 in what's called weighted case openings. So we are a very busy office, yet we're not the biggest.
Already lean, the program is now facing a near 25% cut in personnel.
This hasn't been set in stone yet. We're hoping that there's going to be some help for us, but as of now, that's what the budget looks like for the federal defender. It looks like it's going to shrink that much, 23%. We're going to have to lay off almost 25% of our staff.
Many of the defense attorneys available for defendants who can't afford a private lawyer work for the public defender's office, but private attorneys are regularly contracted to provide the service.
Most of the criminal defendants in the federal system are represented at this time by the federal public defender's office. There is what's called the CJA panel, which is the Criminal Justice Act panel. That is the act that enabled the Federal Defender's Office and the indigent defense system in the federal law. The Criminal Justice Act panel attorneys take overflow cases, conflict cases, and cases that we cannot handle that when we're too busy. More and more cases are going to have to go to these panel attorneys, and they are private lawyers who work for a reduced fee to represent the indigent client. Because of the sequestration, there is a possibility and a probability that their payments will be delayed 3 weeks at the end of this fiscal year, which is September. The situation is that when a panel lawyer represents a defendant, it costs the government more. So what's going to happen is that when our budget shrinks, the government is actually going to be paying more. The taxpayer is going to pay more for the same services. So it's not going to be an ultimate savings to the government.
The shrinking availability of public defenders heavily impacts our basic rights.
Since the landmark case of Gideon versus Wainwright 50 years ago, the Supreme Court has said that indigent defendants have the right to an attorney, and that's why we have this system. The cuts are directly affecting the Sixth Amendment, the protection of the Sixth Amendment, and the right of access to the courts to all people, because this is cuts to the court system in general. But yes, the Sixth Amendment is on the line and the protection of that right.
There is a remedy possible.
Congress can make an appropriation, an emergency appropriation to the court system, to the federal courts. So what needs to be done is people need to contact their congresspeople, their senators, especially Senator Udall, because he is on a committee that deals with appropriation for the courts, and all the other congresspeople in the state and senators.
Barbara Mandel from the New Mexico Criminal Defense Lawyers Association.
Support the courts. We're a third branch of the government. We're in the Constitution, and our budget is tiny compared to the rest of the government, and we cannot cut our services. And in addition, the other side has not cut theirs. Things are still going to be coming. Cases are still going to be coming. People are still going to be arrested, and you just can't cut the other side.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
34 minutes past the hour. It is now our custom at the bottom of the hour to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
I smoked cigarettes for a lot of years. I was going to say for far too many years, but smoking even one cigarette is smoking far too many. I stopped smoking 18 years ago, but because of my years of inhaling cigarette smoke, I naturally enjoy most of my encounters with secondhand smoke. But that casual affair with secondhand smoke does not apply to the smoke from my neighbor's cigarette, filtering through our common kitchen wall. That smoke has a sickly cigarette and a urinal smell instead of secondhand smoke, more like smoke inhaled and exhaled through 14 pairs of lungs. When I smell that smell in my small kitchen, I pour olive oil into my cast iron skillet, grab a jalapeno from the fridge, toss it onto the skillet, and the bad smell gets fried by the kick of a roasting jalapeno. Muy caliente. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
Arriba!
And with that, we conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here. Thanks to my contributing colleague today, Charles Maynard. We'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow. And as always, we hope you join us.